I believe that if you quiet yourself and become a void ready to receive a sign, whether spiritually, physically, or mentally, the universe will speak to you. In its own awesome, weird way, it speaks, and it will lay a path forward, providing purpose and direction and inspiration. Ley lines and invisible cosmic energies all working in perfect concert, guiding us toward a prosperous future should we take the time to simply cease activity and listen. And equally so, this extrasensory ethereal force can prevent harm and proactively warn of danger. I've listened, I've heard it, I've experienced it. I'm a believer. This is a story about how the universe screamed into our collective faces to not proceed, and we did anyways. It's June 2018. We've recently landed the Alliance Laundry Systems business, and it's left us hungry for more appliance work. As luck would have it, our appetites were wet shortly thereafter, with the prospect of pitching a luxury refrigerator brand. Better still, our client contact for the prospective account is a former customer and an agency friend. The opportunity is served up to us on a platter, and it's this mentality that will contribute to our undoing. We take to referring to it internally as a canned lion hunt, and to this day, we regularly, reflectively self-flagellate for this offense. Lesson learned, never take a customer or opportunity for granted, period. Big, big period. The project has a six-week runway, and it's a mess right from the start. There are three creative leads attached, and none of us is really seen eye to eye, narrator most shamefully included. We commit one grave creative sin after another. We're mealy-mouthed with our critiques or fighting for our own ideas without listening to each other and going off on our own only to come back with work we can't possibly stitch together. The list is painfully endless. The three of us flap and flail like a fish off hook on the bottom of a boat while the rest of the team patiently waits for some semblance of order and direction. It's brutal. But we chalk it up as part of the process. And with half of the time spent, we eventually get some creative footing. The good news is that the brand has no personality in market. It's a blank canvas. And as such, we're free to create and build our own beautiful story. See, it's not about the refrigerator. It's about loving a life well lived, a full embrace of achieving not only a financially successful existence, but a meaningful one, and the moments that come about because of it. The kitchen is merely the setting of these stories. It's an affluent woman indulging in a moment of peace with something sweet away from the party in the other room, a party she flawlessly planned to the delight of the guests. It's a proud father welcoming his son home from the army, a moment catching up over a glistening mason jar of from-scratch lemonade becomes an emotional embrace. Father is grateful, son is home safe. It's, that's bullshit. Joe Roggi, chief creative officer, is not on board. I can slap any competitive logo on those ads and they'd work. If this is about loving life, then it needs to be love. This needs to be raw. I want to feel it. She needs to be in absolute ecstasy, not just smiling. Dad needs to have tears in his eyes. I want to see him crying over his son's homecoming. Joe's not wrong. These moments need to be real. And that's how what is affectionately referred to around the office as the naked ad comes into existence. I want to see two people who just worked up an appetite from a hedonistic marathon in the bedroom, standing sweaty and naked in front of their fridge, ravenously looking for something to eat. That's the ad. Oh, I get it. It's like after a big workout, or maybe they just did a triathlon. No! It's not like, it is. It is two people naked. They're in front of their fridge and they probably would eat a raw steak right now. That's how hard they've been at it. That's how hungry they are. That's real. That's what this needs. Okie dokie. Advertising is a weird business, and we find ourselves engaged in some pretty bizarre conversations, compounded to the nth degree when taken out of context. But no matter how hard I try, no matter how creative I pretend to be, I never thought I'd turn to a coworker and ask, can we see a little more of his butt crack? And yet, There we were, four creatives huddled around a monitor giving direction on hand placement, degree of side boob, and amount of sweat and body hair to our photo retoucher. The ad makes everyone uncomfortable, and in our world, uncomfortable is good. The team is energized, we're invigorated, relatable yet raw. That's the cornerstone of the campaign. That's the difference between liking it and loving it. In our client's world, though, uncomfortable is very bad. 2 weeks out, we run the naked ad past our inside man, and it's a hard no. We're told these folks don't have much of a sense of humor, and we should probably explore other avenues. Nice work, though. The news neuters us. And if I'm being genuine with you, and that's the purpose of this series, confessional level honesty with a dash of entertainment, the creative never really gels. The concept is there. The work is good. We just can't get the stuff to stick together. The batter doesn't set. It's still raw in the middle. Whatever. Our own hubris insists we'll cover the blemishes with a charming presentation. And foolishly onward, we march. 19 hours from the pitch. Our flight will depart Milwaukee at 3:30 p.m. and arrive in Atlanta at 6:30 p.m. with the time difference. There's a brief layover in Atlanta before we depart for Miami at 7:30, putting us in Florida around 9:30 p.m. Get some late-night Cuban food, maybe toast ourselves with a pre-celebratory cocktail because, again, canned lion hunt. Around 10, back in our rooms to wrap up the deck around 11 p.m., in bed by midnight. It's a solid plan. Feeling particularly invincible without any justification whatsoever, I taunt the universe by declaring, what could possibly go wrong? Said the universe, hold my beer. At 4:30 p.m., Joe Rogge, Fuzz Martin, Aaron Piria, Kristen Newbert, and I are sitting on the runway in the same spot we've been for the past hour and a half. Things are getting a little tense, but we're told the connecting flight is also slightly delayed, so we should be fine. It'll be a run through the Atlanta airport, but we're good. 17 hours from the pitch, we are not good. We are still in Milwaukee, and we will probably miss our connecting flight. 14 hours from the pitch, we're in Atlanta, and our connecting flight is gone. Gonzo, bye-bye plane. Miami is about 10 hours from Atlanta, and Aaron begins tracking down a rental car. The day is beginning to take its toll on all of us. Atlanta is a nightmare. That the airport is under construction doesn't help. It's removed ceiling tiles, exposed all of the wiring. It gives the place a dystopian feel. And below, it's just an undulating beast, a massive biblical worm of humans pushing and shoving. The five of us huddled in a circle are bumped and pushed and shoved, our bodies absorbing every blow. Joe has managed to connect with a real human from the airline. There is a plane. It has five available seats, and it leaves in 20 minutes. Joe secures our tickets. It's a sign. It's a miracle. It's just the universe toying with us. 11 hours from the pitch, we are on a plane. It is taking off. We are going to make it to Miami. I doubt we will see our rooms much before 2 a.m., but that's fine. There's a place to lay my head in blissful sleep, and tomorrow, it's already tomorrow in Miami, there will be a successful pitch. Except no, there won't be rooms, no, there won't be beds or sleep, and the real kick in the crotch, we have already lost the pitch. We just don't know it yet. 7 hours from the pitch, I have no recollection of landing or renting the car or driving to the hotel, but here we are. I'm convinced I smell abhorrent. It's that been awake too long, stewing in my own juices in an airport on a plane on a runway smell. I'm failing to stand up straight in the hotel lobby. It's more of a box step as I stare into the middle distance, waiting for Fuzz to secure our hotel keys. I'm nodding in agreement, or maybe it's just nodding off, as Rogge lays out the next couple of hours. Let's get to our rooms, splash some water in our faces, and then we meet for an hour or so to wrap up the deck. All right, it's no Ocean's 11, but it's a plan and it's doable. At the same moment, I'm starting to wonder why it's taking Fuzz so long. He seemingly materializes in front of us and delivers the good news. So when we didn't check in by midnight, says Fuzz, they started giving away our hotel rooms. They only have two rooms left, and for some reason they have Joe and Aaron staying together. They're trying to find us three more rooms nearby. In my head, I see someone throw two slabs of raw meat between a circle of five starving Rottweilers with their teeth bared. But it doesn't come to blows. It's decided that I have the deck and Joe has the plan. Best to get us accommodated and working as soon as possible. We part ways with Aaron Fuss-Kristen and agree to meet back in the lobby in about 5 hours to go through the presentation. They drive off into the night to God knows where. I agree to meet Joe in his room in 15 minutes. We are now 6 hours from the pitch. Joe's room is massive. It's a corner spot. Two of the four walls are all glass, and I can see the sun flirting with the horizon, threatening to rise. Our brains have lost any semblance of firmness. It's just gray matter slop rolling around in our skulls like cereal left steeped in milk for 8 hours. Our actions are neither strategic or creative. We are just acting on impulse now. It's just primal. I'm hungry. Let's eat, says Ragi. Sure. Fine. It's 4 a.m. Let's eat. There's a 24-hour Checkers across the street from our hotel. I can hear you asking, why Daniel? Who were the clientele sampling the fine culinary fare of Checkers outside your Miami hotel at 4 a.m.? I am so glad you asked. It was two prostitutes, a man failing to conceal a handgun tucked into his pants, and a bachelor party from Detroit. Add to that a creative director and a chief creative officer. I'm so tired by now, the words I force my mouth to make are barely coherent. I would like a Big Buford combo and a banana shake. I turn to discover Ragi has opted to engage the man with the gun rather than order. Now, someday, I would like Joe's job. But even the two or three synapses I have left still firing tell me Joe getting shot by a stranger in Miami isn't how I want that to happen. I mean, obviously, I want to be the one pulling the trigger, right? Am I right? But of course, Joe is Joe. Cordial, charming, and engaging. And if you saw these two from a distance, you'd think they were old friends. And besides, we quickly learn it's not a gun tucked into his pants. It is, in fact, a massive, inoperable, gun-shaped tumor. How do I know this? Because he pulls his pants down and lifts his shirt to show us. My stomach does a loop-de-loop, order up, Big Buford combo. There's no way I'm holding down food. Joe orders, buys the fella dinner, nothing else happens. We go back to Joe's room. All right, we're not getting anything done at this point. Let's get an hour of sleep, meet in the lobby at 6, and wrap this thing up, Joe says. Boy, I'm sure glad we went on that side quest for food. I don't sleep. We are now 4 hours from the pitch. And why is everything's kind of fuzzy around the edges? Is the deck done? Oh, is the deck done? I think the deck is probably done. The deck is probably, I'm hungry. I'm also sleepy. Where are we? Is this Miami? What's this smell? It smells bad. Oh, it's me. I smell bad. I should take a shower. The pitch. Two-fifths of us have been awake for going on 48 hours. We meet our contact at the door, pleasantries are exchanged, and we're led to a small, cramped, bluish-gray room slightly larger than a bathroom stall. There's barely space to push a chair out. That tenuous, anxiety-stricken moment of getting ourselves hooked up to their technology that those in the industry are all too familiar with passes without incident. Ragi and I fist bump, locked and loaded, wired for sound, the universe threw everything it had at us, and we overcame. We're here, and we're ready. The door opens, and our three European prospects enter. A man, a woman, and a giant. Clearly, they have modeled their refrigerators after this guy. He's nearly as wide in the shoulders as I am tall. He could crush a watermelon in one hand the same way I'd smash an egg in mine. His English is weak, which makes him all the more imposing. He sits down, the ground shakes, and he puts his head on the table, face down. Entering with them is the thickest, most noxious wave of stale alcohol smell I've ever experienced. Okay, it has weight and mass. It is a presence. If this whole thing were a movie, that smell would be played by Randy Quaid. We obviously notice it. They notice us noticing it. And then the awkward silence of this moment is broken by Aaron Piria, the greatest comedian of our generation. So, you guys go out last night? Someone snorts, holding back laughter. we present, and it's flawless. And while I would love to dramatize some specific moment or comment or whatever, nothing extraordinary really happens. We pitch, it goes perfect, and then it's over. And then it is every thespian's worst nightmare. It's silence. Nothing. We just kind of sit there looking at one another blankly. All of that for this? Ugh. Aaron asks if there are any questions, and one of them says no, and politely tells us they'll be in touch. Then the three Europeans stand and leave. Randy Quaid decidedly stays. I don't remember much else. I don't remember the drive back to the hotel, packing my bags, or flying to Milwaukee that afternoon. Terrifyingly, I don't remember driving from General Mitchell International Airport back to my home. I sleep. I take the following day off. Roggy calls me while I'm out mowing the lawn. We didn't get it. It was the agency that pitched the day before us. Client bought it in the room. It was over before we even got to Atlanta. I hang up with Joe, finish the lawn, and go inside. I pull a pint glass from the cabinet above the sink and turn to look at the fridge begrudgingly. And when I open it, the only thing I see is the ice-cold plastic bottle of orange juice staring back at me. Fresh squeezed from Florida. If you listen, the universe speaks.